morning, early-ish morning. On a Saturday morning. This is Chris Osborne. I'm here with Neil Davey.
Hello.
We are recording another episode, the first episode of 2024
Happy New Year.
Of our podcast, All Consumed. And we are at a lovely little bakery.
Forno.
Yes. What do you think about this?
It's great. Bakery? It's great. It's been on my list for a long, long time. Yeah. Seen one of those places you see all over social media. Mostly for the Maritozzi.
Maritozzi, sort of cream filled buns.
Yeah, the classic Roman breakfast. Mm. So I've seen that any number of times over the last however many months, yeah. Probably since the day they opened. I've been, ooh, this looks interesting. Came past it last year and didn't have time to stop. And then, yeah, then when the suggestion came up, we should meet here, they're like, yes, hell yes.
Yeah. Well, I've only been here a couple of times, but I spent a small fortune goods both times. Not that they were terribly expensive, just that I just stocked up on treats, yeah, which I probably will do again before we leave here. This time I had a gianduja bun. That I'd never had before. It was really good. And what's exciting is they're starting to put out like the savory bread.
Seriously, the smell
for later
here.
Today.
Is, yeah, there's, yeah, like,
I'm, there's like, some focaccia going.
Look, yeah, I'm watching a guy cut up the focaccia at the moment, and it just looks
the only
astonishing.
Real disappointment, and I'm really sorry that they don't have the sfogliatella. Mm-hmm. The sort of like
shaped
pastries.
The lobster tail.
Neapolitan.
Yeah.
They do it proper and well here. And I was looking forward to having one and getting one for you. So I'm sorry they don't have those there, but just another
reason one of the greatest things I've ever eaten in my life.
And indulge.
It was one of those in an Italian bakery in the north end of Boston. I had a sfogliatella and, you know, it was life-changing.
I think honestly, Neil, last time I was here, we talked about it on this podcast. I remember this conversation.
It is an absolute weakness of mine.
All right.
Like the Italian pastries stuff, and the same. The Maritozzi was just it was beautiful.
Oh, nice. All right. Well, what else is beautiful, man? Too. What's been going on?
So yeah, it's been we're a couple of weeks into the new year, which is nice. We've made it through. That's good. But that's a win. Christmas was lovely and chilled. New Year was very chilled. Didn't even see in the new year. Just went.
Oh, yeah.
Cooked a very nice dinner and drank a very nice bottle of wine and went to bed. And that was good. It felt mature. It felt like an adult thing to do. It's not an option I always take.
Okay.
And then it's interesting that we come here. So one of my resolutions for the year, and in terms of all consumed and consumption in general, there's a long list of places that I've been adding to over the last however many weeks and months and actually probably years. Quite often based on other people's social media, on what friends have recommended, or palettes that I trust have recommended. And I figured, actually, you know what, this year, through my Instagram feed, for sure, possibly TikTok, if I ever venture back into the world of TikTok, going to go and tick these places off. Going to go and try everything.
These yummy sandwiches and stuff that you see.
they're kind of the lower to mid-range end of the world. Like the lunch deals, the good sandwiches, the good burgers. Long time since I've kind of sort of tracked down all the highly recommended burgers city. And I go, there's loads of places that I keep reading about and go, yeah, what the hell? Just go and make it. No one's going to make it happen for me. So go and do it. So my all-consumed resolution for the year is to consume those.
Okay, so you actually consume more. Yeah, okay. Well, that's cool. All right. Please include me in any other
absolutely.
Adventures.
Absolutely, yes. No,
there.
Indeed. No, that's the other thing. It's also a nice opportunity to
catch up with somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. And go and venture into bits of London that I don't normally do. That it's so easy. I mean, this morning, I live in North London. It's taken me less than an hour to get to Hackney. Dead easy. Just don't do it enough. Same with, and I think that you So you recently got to do a little bit of South London. You don't often
New Year, but old me kind of thing. Had sort of a lighter than usual workload the other day. Found myself free at lunch, close to Borough Market, and something I used to do all the time is cruise through Borough Market, grab some street food, and then cruise on. And I remember when I first moved to London, I fell in love with the grilled chorizo at Brindisi.
A brilliant sandwich. When I'm in the early days of Borough Market,
it used to be a big
That was the key when they were tucked in the middle of the market,
And so they still do it. I feel like they used to not do it for a long time, but they did it. They were doing it on Friday or whatever day it was. And walked through there, had that, got a scotch egg, a ginger egg.
Nice.
So it's almost like these flavor memories from like when I first fell in love with London and things like that. Strolled on to Tate Modern, which is somewhere I used to spend a lot of time. Don't necessarily have to do that anymore. I tend to find other places for my art these days, but it's just a big, awesome building with obviously world-class collection.
Yeah.
Nothing there that blew me away that I wasn't already in love with, but it was just fun hanging out there for a while. And it was just nice reconnecting and just realizing this thing you tell yourself if you live, well, anywhere really, but like if you live in a big city, I love living in London because at any moment I could go out and do blank, but then you find yourself in bed or watching TV or whatever.
Yeah, no, you never do. I spent 2 years, 3 years of my life. I was at the Albert Hall. As a point, I worked in the Albert Hall part time. This is brilliant. I walked past the Natural History Museum, the Victoria and Albert Museum, the Science Museum, 5 days a week.
Yeah,
working 4 hours a day. I finish at one. I will pop to the Science Museum for a couple of hours. I'll pop into the Natural. Of course, I never went.
Yeah.
Never went.
Every 10 minutes
day.
Away from a Velazquez.
Yeah,
and you never see it. Things like that.
Never see it. Worked for years, very very close to the Tower of London. Never went.
Yeah. So anyway, the other day I did.
Brilliant. Well done.
It was
nice. Well done you.
Yeah. But that was en route to something which I'd really love to talk about. I think I was talking to you off before we started recording about it. And I was going to a screening of this new Steve McQueen film. The British artist, not the ex-American actor. But
12 Years a Slave was one of his, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's Steve McQueen.
And the Small Axe stuff on the BBC or something.
More sort of, he does a lot more arty stuff, obviously. Yeah. And this is a film that's out or coming out soon. Look around just for public screenings in February.
Okay.
And the film is called Occupied City. It's a bit of an endeavor. It's over 4 hours long. There's an intermission, but it takes some doing to sit that long and observe this, but it's worth it. And the idea is it's based on a book called Atlas of an Occupied City by an author, Bianca Skeiter, if I'm pronouncing that right. And it films about 130 locations in Amsterdam that were significant for whatever reason during the Nazi occupation. And there's a narration, a very calm narration over it about what happened here. A resistance person made false IDs. The Nazis took over the school and did whatever there. These people died here, this, da, da, da. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. But it's filmed more contemporary. So the shots are from sort of 2020, 2021, so like during the pandemic and the lockdown there. And there's even some scenes of Ukrainian refugees being processed at one point and all these things. And it's beautiful if you know Steve McQueen's films and artwork.
Yeah.
He's got an eye. And it seems so effortless the way the sort of camera just hangs on something or finds some special little moments, sometimes quite intimate moments, behind the scenes type stuff. After a while, you're sitting there, you think, it might have taken weeks or days just to set this shot up. And then they got lucky with some couple who was nuzzling together in a corner, or they were there at the right time for this, or they got up at 3 a.m. to make sure they were set up at this gymnasium for when these people come and arrive and do. And it's just incredible to watch. And you really get a sense of Amsterdam, which is a great city to get a sense of. Beautiful.
No, absolutely.
And I think that's actually where McQueen now lives. And it's interesting, too, because as the narration is going on, sometimes it just fits like perfectly with what's on the screen. Other times it's completely different. And at times you'll think, oh my God, since World War II, nothing's changed, or everything's changed, or here we are again in the same situation, or people seem to forget what happened not so long ago.
It is recent history. That's the thing. Somebody pointed this out to me the other day. I think it was in the middle, and it was an internet meme or something that was going around. The fact that this year is the 2024 will be the 40th anniversary of Careless Whisper.
Okay, wow.
Which means it's been longer between now and the release of Careless Whisper than it was between the release of Careless Whisper and D-Day.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. All right.
Jesus, really? And it's things like that that kind of throw the Second World War into relief for me. Yeah. The places it happened a long time before I was born. Actually, no, it was less than a quarter of a century before I was born.
Yeah,
it was the.
Well, I remember when I was a little kid back in the States. Obviously, my dad, uncles, some of them were still around, and they served on battleships and had like the coolest tattoos from that they got while they were in World War II and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And those guys are gone,
So
great uncle with like really big, almost like Popeye forearms. And he had this tattoo of a hula dancer. When he flexed his muscles, she'd shake her hips. It's fantastic, man. And I think I was very little when I saw that, and I think it changed my world.
Explains why you became a hula dancer.
There you go, yes. And you reminded me, so I'm going to go a little off script here. I can't be very specific. It was a secret that someone showed me, but I was... several years ago, I was on this press trip for a story I was doing in Catalonia. I was way up in the Pyrenees, way up in the mountains, and I met like someone who did from the tourism office of this small little village or like the area that this village was part of. And she took me to this church, and it was famous for this sort of pre-Romanesque style architecture that just blew up, and this was the first place that really did it, so like the sort of squat bodies with the big heads sort of thing. But she says that's nothing. She got to know me, she liked me, we're talking. She takes me to sort of the back of the church, a little administrative office, and I'm looking, there's like these faded frescoes. I was like, wow, that's what she wants me to see. She goes, no, look at this wall. And there's a line of bullet holes about the height of your average forehead, and they kind of raise up, and one's a little lower or higher than the other, and there had been an execution there.
Whoa.
And she's like, I don't know if it was the fascists or the anarchists, but somebody shot the other ones, and there you go. So that was from the Civil War. I mean, a little older, but still quite not that long ago, right. And it's just there. And it was very stark, and it just really made an impression, obviously,
It is. You suddenly are. We are only a generation, two generations away from.
And if you watch the news this morning, only about 2 hours away
from the next one.
You go, which direction are you going? We're
listening to this in the time capsule.
The pre-dawn, Anyway, so... enjoy life now.
Absolutely.
All right. Good, good, good.
Absolutely. Actually, I mean, in terms of the 1960s and recent history, something else I really wanted to talk about was my experience of little arty things recently, or an installation that I did. I think you call it. There's a venue up at King's Cross called Lightbox. So, and they're using it as a big interactive light space. It's just kind of big warehouse size oblong room. As a exhibition short film, don't know what you'd call it really, thing called The Moonwalkers.
Okay.
On at the moment is narrated by Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Who obviously presumably from his association with Apollo 13.
Forrest Gump.
And possibly Forrest Gump. And it's interesting, it's about the people who walked on the moon. The very, very few people that to date have walked on the moon. So there's a lot of stuff about the Apollo missions. There's stuff about Artemis, which I think this week was knocked back from later this year till 2025. Yeah. The sister thing where the NASA and other groups are putting people back on the moon, hopefully at some point this decade. But it's fascinating. It's a really interesting.
Okay.
Initially, I think we paid £25 to watch 50 minutes of Tom Hanks talk about space, and it is phenomenal. It's incredibly involving. It's quite moving. Basically, there's projections on all kind of four walls. The sound is remarkable. There's footage from the Apollo missions I've never seen before. There's interviews with former astronauts and the potential new astronauts. It's a really, really interesting way to spend 50 minutes. And the Apollo launch clip is loud. It's brilliantly, immersively loud. Yeah, the whole place, you do get a bigger sense of the scale, the sacrifices and everything that went into all of this, which also leads me on to my other and looping back to where we were before about social media inspiration. I was looking through Instagram yesterday, and as sometimes pops up on reels and things, there's all random ads. There was a little clip of a film that was on Amazon Prime called A Million Miles Away. It's based on the true story of a former Mexican farm worker called Jose Hernandez, who ended up as an astronaut and flew a space shuttle mission. Okay, sorry, spoiler alert. Basically, it is based on a true story, however. And it's just popped up on Amazon Prime, I think, this week. Stars Michael Pena as the main man, as an actress called Rosa Salazar, who plays his wife, which also, I'm doing that classic thing of what have I seen her in before? And realized she was in a very little scene comedy show from about a decade ago called Man Seeking Woman. And if you've never seen it, I would urge everyone to track it down.
Okay.
It's hilarious and surreal. Jay Baruchel, who you probably best know as the voice of the main character in How to Train Your Dragon.
Okay.
As this kind of slightly nerdy loser guy just trying to meet women and wanting to fall in love. And it's brilliant. Really awful, really, really strange. And Rosa Salazar is in it, and it is an absolute delight. But yeah, this film, I knew it was going to be my wife, Angela's cup of tea. So we sat down and watched it last night, and it's charming and lovely and moving and funny. And
it's on Prime.
And it's on Amazon Prime as of this week, I believe. So yeah, I would heartily, heartily recommend a little consumption of that.
Okay, all right. Well, January is a good time to sit and watch things on a screen. So one more recommendation.
All the pastries that we
there you go. A little more down to earth. Okay. Something I've been watching on BBC is Traitors, which is in its second season. And it's really not the sort of thing I would normally think I would enjoy.
It's interesting that you're recommending this, because you're not the first person whose views and opinions I absolutely trust on this stuff.
Okay,
who's recommended it to me. And like you, it is not my... did not think it was
show,
my cup of
kind
thing.
Kind of like
my
cup of tea. A game show contest sort of thing. But the way it's set up, very contrived, but it taps into people's emotions. And you see these, see, I'm tempted to say alliances, but it's, you see these friendships happen, and then they got to sort of go against each other to play the game. And people really struggle with their emotions, mm-hmm. which, I mean, maybe it feels like a cruel voyeur to watch it, but it's just really fascinating. You get attached to people and you see them struggling, and it's just fun to watch. I don't think they really realized what they had in the first season. I just thought it was a contrived game show thing. Mm-hmm. Certain audience would love it. And then you saw the personalities of the contestants come out, and they seem to be doing as good or maybe a better job with this second season that's maybe 5 episodes in.
Okay.
And so you're just really compelling to watch, and also the way they'll end an episode, really great cliffhangers that just are frustrating, and you're frustrated all day until, or 2 days, depending on how long you get away for the next episode. And it's fun. I think there's an American version, an Aussie version.
I think it's one of those, a bit like Strictly. I think it's one of those things that's been a bit of a surprise hit, and they've
heard
sold the
good
format
things about the non-British ones. I think the Brits maybe squirm a little bit more, and that's what makes this one so interesting. I love watching it. As a foreign-born resident here on this island, I'm learning things about my chosen country folk.
Thanks. Yeah. It's always interesting with things like that. Kind of catch fire. It's that, I remember, it was like the first season of Big Brother when no one knew what it was going to be. And it was, I went on a trip a few years after the first season with Nick Bateman. So nasty Nick Bateman from the first series. He was an absolutely lovely guy and just very intelligent. But he, you know, got kicked out because he was effectively playing this kind of traitorous game and playing people off against each other and the voting system and stuff. And it was like, yeah, there was money at stake. It was a game show, yeah, as far as he was concerned.
He was playing, yeah.
And he was playing. And other people weren't. And it was easy to look back a few years on when the whole Nasty Nick thing of like, he got manipulative and this. And go, A, fair play to him because he kind of rode that image out for a long, long time and I think made quite a lot of money from it. And B, it was, that first series was not like subsequent series when it was lots of wannabes going in and go, I'm going to use this as a springboard to do something else or be a character. It was interesting, relatively normal, for want of a better word, people going in and just interacting, and no one really knew what the show was going to be. And then obviously it just sort of sparked off into completely different directions. I'm now slightly distracted because the Gillette just come out.
It's starting to smell better in here, get a little louder. We're distracted.
I'm going to have to go and buy some more stuff and go home and watch The Traitors.
So maybe on that note, you know, if people want to find out more about you, what can they do?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, it is at Dine Hard. I've sacrificed X. I have terminated my account with X.
Terminated it?
Absolutely.
Mine's still sitting there.
It was... I know there's always a risk on people saying, oh, well, yeah, what if somebody takes your name? You go, really? If what are they going to do? I'm not Taylor Swift. It's not going to really affect
you. You're not?
In my dreams and only on occasional Wednesdays. So there's still sort of on Threads. I was getting a little frustrated with that. I think trying to rebuild the kind of the whole early days of Twitter, it just feels like such a slog. I like Threads, and I will. I've kind of taken off the phone at the moment. I think it was also one of those little January, maybe a little break from social media, other than the visual stuff of Instagram. So I'm mostly on Instagram at Dine Hard, DineHard.
Wonderful.
The film with a terrible pun.
All right.
And yourself.
Yeah.
Let me track you down.
Yeah, I'm on Threads, Chris Osborne, OSBURN, also Instagram with the same. Got my own blog, tikichris.com. You were mentioning New Year's resolutions. I purposely don't have one this year, but I had one last year and I wrote about it. So that might be something folks can read about, my process through the year. Ended up with like close to 20 posts, something like that, just going through my New Year's resolution. And a little bit of a struggle, turned out a little different than I thought, but I did meet my goal. So it's about that. So that might be something folks want to read on my blog, deepchris.com.
Fantastic. And somewhere underneath us, at this little fade out bit, there is a piece of music playing, which is
The Year Was Strange.
The Year Was Strange.
By E. Nubb. All right. There you go. Hey, thanks, Neil.
Cheers, Chris.
All right.